Listeners to the Old Mole will likely have heard about the global Sumud flotilla, which sailed across the Mediterranean Sea this past summer in an attempt to deliver humanitarian aid to the Gaza Strip in defiance of Israel's illegal and inhumane blockade of almost 20 years, controlling the movement of goods and people in and out of the Strip. The flotilla included some 40 vessels and 500 participants from more than 44 countries. 473 of them were kidnapped and imprisoned in Israel. This was neither the first nor the last such flotilla to attempt to deliver humanitarian aid, though it was the largest so far, larger than all the previous flotilla missions combined. Here today to talk with us on the Old Mole about this is one of the participants from Portland, Paul Reed. Thank you for your work, Paul, and thank you for joining us on the Old Mole.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be with you.
Can you tell us how you came to join the flotilla and what the project aimed and aims to accomplish?
Well, Palestine has been a topic that I've been tracking for over 20 years, and I have felt especially drawn to that issue just because of the U.S. complicity in it. And so it's been what feels like the work of my life. And I have also had sailing experience and have experience working with media as a designer. So all of those came together to motivate me to get involved with the flotilla. And I had actually signed up to join the Freedom Flotilla Coalition flotilla last year in 2024, but that fell through because Israel sabotaged that mission leaving from Turkey. I've been connected with these flotillas sometime.
And the goal of the flotilla is to bring humanitarian aid, to break the blockade. But for the past 15 years or so, all of those attempts have failed. So, since the aid does not seem to be getting through, what else is this series of flotillas accomplishing or working to accomplish?
Yes. What Israel has been doing with its siege on Palestinians in Gaza is considered normal by most countries around the world, and it absolutely should not be considered normal. These are very inhumane policies that are degrading and not even life-sustaining. And so ultimately, the purpose of the flotilla was to create a new normal. And to do that, it requires people to get involved and to get involved in the political process, boycott, do all the things that put pressure on these government entities that are doing these crimes with impunity. What a lot of people don't realize is Israel is imposing this siege just unilaterally, deciding what they want to do for their own political ambitions in historic Palestine. But Gaza is the only place in the world where a person cannot flee by boat. If you are a refugee and need to leave for your safety, you cannot even leave by boat. It is completely surrounded in the siege.
Which is part of what people say when they describe Gaza as an open-air prison.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's got one of the highest population densities in the world. So.
So the blockade seems obviously inhumane. We've heard a lot of stories about, in particular lately, the starvation, the difficulties of medical treatment, and so on. Just the increasingly unlivable conditions in Gaza, in Palestine, and particularly in Gaza. What kind of humanitarian aid was the flotilla bringing?
My understanding is that over $100,000 worth of aid was carried on our boats and was taken when Israel intercepted those boats. We don't know what happened to all of that aid. I've actually asked a medical worker who's actually from Portland in Gaza if there is any evidence of that aid getting to them. And of course, the answer is no. But I know that on my boat, we had food, so like rice and biscuits and soup mix and medical aid, such as PPE, for example, gloves and masks. And I know we had a big box of EpiPens, but there were many different kinds of aid, mostly food and medical across all of the boats.
All of which was then confiscated by
Yes.
Israel.
Yes.
And Israel did not even wait until you got to the borders of this zone that they are claiming as part of their security. My understanding is boats began to be attacked and harassed far, far from Israel.
Yes. Actually, we were as far as Tunis, Tunisia, when two of our boats were attacked and they were bombed in the span of 2 days. One was the family boat, the other was the Alma. They were our largest boats, and incendiary devices were dropped on the decks of those boats and caught fire, and they had to put those fires out. Fortunately, no one was killed or injured. Then we were attacked at sea, and there was one night where they just dropped bombs on us all night long. They were explosive devices that shredded our sails and broke the rigging holding those sails. So anything that powerful could have absolutely been, they were life-threatening. But again, fortunately, nobody was killed in that event. And then, of course, we were intercepted still in international waters and boarded by Israeli commandos and taken to Israel to a prison there. But even during that interception, we were attacked with water cannons and various means to get our boats to stop.
What was that like? I mean, water cannons, these are the sorts of things there are films of the police in the US using during the civil rights movement to push protesters across the street. I mean, it's very powerful. It's not just a hose. Is that right?
Absolutely. I actually think those water cannons would be also life-threatening. Just the power of them was so strong, they started breaking components of our boat. In fact, one of the hatches started to break from the water cannon, and we had to hold a bucket under it when we were in the cabin just to keep the water from entering. So yeah, if a person was standing on deck with a water cannon that hit them, they would be thrown into the sea. And being thrown into the sea at night is considered a death threat. It's very hard to find people at sea at night.
What happened when the Israelis boarded your boat? I mean, you're in international waters. Did they justify it in any way? Was there any attempt at discourse about this?
Yeah, actually, the VHF radio it is the method that you use to communicate at sea officially. And the Israelis did have someone announce on the VHF emergency line a long message that was politically charged, telling us not to violate the international law that they are imposing upon us. And I actually have a recording of our official response to them that also addressed the nonviolent humanitarian nature of the mission, and it was clearly not in violation of any international law. In fact, Israel is the one that has been violating international law by perpetuating this genocide, and honestly, the entire existence of Israel from 1948 and the ethnic cleansing since then.
What languages were these announcements? Was this conversation such as it was taking place in? Your boat had people from many different countries. As I understand, the flotilla was not segregated by nation. How were people communicating with each other on the boat and then when Israel showed up?
Yes. The announcement that was made by the Israelis on the VHF radio was in perfect, not just English, but US English, which I thought was kind of interesting that it was not even someone that had a strong sort of Israeli Hebrew accent. So, yeah, English was the official language used for that. But it was actually an incredible experience to be a part of each of these boats because of the number of languages and cultures that were represented in every boat. Every boat had almost as many languages spoken as there were participants on each boat. So it was like a world tour on every boat. And I was actually able to sail on multiple boats during the journey. So it was neat to have that sort of international exposure and to meet so many people that you didn't have to explain Palestine to, that they just got it.
So this was the experience of being on the boats and being involved in the project was also an experience of solidarity with each other, with people who understood the problem of Israel's colonization of and control and occupation of Palestine and shared a vision of what should be happening in a more just world. And there was a general strike in Italy. There was support from some governments around the world, a few, and from people beyond those who were on the boats. What was your understanding or experience of that solidarity?
The solidarity was so incredible. It just witnessing the crowds in Barcelona and Tunisia was something I'll carry with me my entire life. The sheer numbers of people that came out and the way that they expressed their solidarity in dancing and in music and in drawing photos. And even there was a woman in Barcelona that brought she's a toy maker, and she brought a bubble maker that she wanted us to deliver to someone in Gaza. So the people showing up in mass was incredible, but also the protests that happened with the Italian dock workers and the way that that inspired the entire country to shut everything down in response to the flotilla was an enormous boon for the mission and to spread the awareness across the world. And we also had boats that were sent from many countries that, for performative reasons or otherwise, they felt compelled enough by their population that they needed to at least provide some level of support. And so Spain, Greece, Italy, and Turkey all sent boats to accompany us on the mission.
But none of those government boats intervened when Israel took 473 people hostage. And you were among those who was kidnapped and imprisoned in Israel.
Yes, yeah, none of the boats that were sailing with us were there to actually defend us from an attack by Israel. I think that the reality is many of them fear the repercussions, either diplomatically or economically, from an actual defense of even their own population that were on the boats. And it's sad that Israel has such impunity on international waters. Even earlier this year, Israel sent two missiles through the hull of another ship called the Conscience, and it was over 1,000 miles away from Israel. And no country has held Israel to account for that. And fortunately, again, nobody was killed in that attack, but there were people on the boat when it happened. And for these actions to happen, we need to understand these are acts of piracy, and they need to be held to account.
So, given that sense of impunity that Israel has clearly developed because of the neglect of other nations in their responses to Israeli piracy, how did that affect, do you think, your treatment when you were kidnapped by Israel? What was that experience like?
Yeah, I was concerned. We had been also following there have been multiple movements of people, another called the Thousand Medellins, which actually sent a flotilla immediately after ours. But there have been many others that have also been coordinating their own resistance movements, either by land or by sea, to Gaza and to try to break the siege. And I was just concerned that Israel was going to try to use our flotilla because it was so much bigger than all of the others that they wanted to put a stop to it. And previous flotilla missions, they had used terms like calling it a selfie yacht. So it was more focused on, it was attention seeking or whatever. But with our flotilla, they referred to us as terrorists. And how Israel defines the people that they're trying to attack is important because there's a track record or a pattern there. And I was concerned that they were going to try to attack our boats and potentially kill people on the boats in order to send a clear message that we were not allowed to resist empire. And then there was also the treatment and response that we were given in Israel or the occupied Palestinian territories and in Israeli prisons that also, you don't know what they're going to do to you, but I was concerned for sure.
And what was that treatment like? How you taken into custody on the boat and moved to the prison, and what happened there? What kind of contact did you have with each other, with the outside world, with your national governments?
I didn't have any contact with the outside world the entire time I was in Israeli prison, and I would just say that the Israeli prison system is really designed just to dehumanize and to crush you. And they to see even the cold-heartedness and the arrogance of the Israeli soldiers was just breathtaking to me. And even in the port of Ashdod, where we were taken initially, we were bound and forced to sit in a stress position for 6 hours until 3 in the morning, and then they started processing us into the prison system. And from there, they actually had to bus us hours down to the Negev Desert, where the Kitziot prison was located. It was n actually near the border with Egypt. But the worst abuse that I received was them slamming me against a metal fence. And, there's also humiliation tactics. They make you strip naked and do humiliating things in that situation. And they stole our valuables, even our medications, anything looking like a medication, which I'm pretty sure is a war crime. And it wasn't just the Israelis, it was also the US government response to the US citizens that had been arrested by Israel. Technically, Israel is a separate country, and we are supposed to be given consular services in an event like that, but it took them 3 days to be able to even meet with us in the prison. And that was after many other countries had already met with their citizens that were in the prison. Some of the other countries even brought their ambassador to the prison to meet with the detainees.
So the United States was just not as powerful or did not have an ambassador on the ground.
Apparently so. No, that's the line that they told us. They claimed to try to do everything that they could, working day and night to try to release us. But none of us believe that. In fact, they said that they had tried to bring in water and protein bars to us, but the Israelis wouldn't allow them. But we know for a fact that the Greek government, for example, was able to get coffee and cigarettes and chocolate to their detainees. But somehow the US government does not have as much control as the Greek government when it comes to supporting its citizens in Israel. I don't think so. When you look at the policies of Mike Huckabee, which is the US ambassador to Israel, and the entire US relationship with Israel, it would be no surprise that they would want to make our stay in Israel as unpleasant as possible and withhold the support that they are required to offer to us. Even one of the things that they said when we were meeting with them, this is a direct quote. They said, "I'm sorry, but the US has no jurisdiction over Israeli security affairs." And there were probably 10 of us men in a cage with them while they said that. And we all instantly broke out laughing because we essentially are funding the Israeli security affairs. So it's just ridiculous that they're telling us these lines.
So the US eventually did get Americans released, however belatedly, after citizens of other countries had been released. And what's it been like since you've been back? How's your recovery been? What's your experience been returning to the US?
It's been wonderful to be back home, and I am so grateful to friends and family in Portland that have been so supportive. Even my employer has been very understanding with the significant extra length of time that I was out from what we expected. But I am so happy to see so many people responding with questions and wanting to understand more and wanting to just talk about the experience. And even the response from local media, I'm so grateful that there has been some coverage of the flotilla. And ultimately, I want people to be able to see and understand not just what happened to me, but to translate that to how much worse it is for Palestinians, for example, that are in Israeli prisons. People are now just starting to discover that. And I think having someone that's local that was a part of that flotilla movement, it makes it feel a little bit more personal. And my hope is that people will find ways to get involved and resist these really degrading, inhumane, and abusive policies that Our government is directly enabling by its support for Israel.
And what do you recommend for people who do want to get involved in addressing the US government's policies, in helping the Palestinian people and cause? How can people find out more? How can people get involved?
I love the question, and I will say that there are so many people that were on the flotilla that took a special interest, I think, in the US participants. Their eyebrows raised because everyone in the world knows that the US is enabling this more than any other country by far. And so what Portlanders may not realize is their impact and their involvement has such a huge impact on this issue. So getting involved somehow is really, I would say, a duty, considering all of the abuse that has happened. And really, the best place that I can think of is, as like a starting off place, is a website run by the Americans United for Palestinian Human Rights, which is AUPHR.org. And people can go there and just sign up for a mailing list, and it's always current and gives local ways to prioritize getting involved and events that they can attend, actions they can do. I would encourage someone to follow that. And I have an Instagram account that I'm hoping to be able to send a message out soon with more local ways to show support and get involved as well. My Instagram account is at Global Thinker.
Well, thank you so much, Paul Reed, for talking with us and for your work on this important issue. Thank you so much.
I'm so grateful for you taking the time and for people having enough interest to listen to this important issue.
War is a murder, there's money at stake. Even Kushner agrees it's good a real estate. War is a murder, ask Netanyahu. He's got a psalm for that, he's got a bomb for you. War is a murder, it's an old desert faith, it's a nation state sanctioned righteous hate. Let's talk about dead people, I mean our dead people. War is a murder, it's the vengeance of God. If you can't see the bodies, they don't blow when they rot. And the flies don't swarm and the children don't cry. If war is a murder, good men don't die. So in a short 20 years, will you vacation the strip? Try not to think about the dead.